It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News Team. Now, here's what's happening.
Roe versus Wade overturned. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. I'm Mark Webster. The sound of celebrations there by pro-life protesters after decades of frustration. As expected, after an earlier leaked draft opinion indicated, the United States Supreme Court making it official this morning, overturning Roe versus Wade, the decades-old decision which legalized abortion nationwide. We begin our coverage with Fox Chief Legal Correspondent Shannon Bream.
The summary of the decision, it says that Roe and Casey are overruled. And the voting that we thought was together, it looks like it has stayed together. Justice Alito has authored the opinion. He is joined by Justices Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Thomas, and Barrett.
Bream says the summary of the monumental decision calls this a correction of a long-standing mistake.
The Constitution does not prohibit the citizens of each state from regulating or prohibiting abortion. Roe and Casey arrogated that authority. We now overrule those decisions and return that authority to the people and their elected representatives.
Law enforcement was already on high alert across the country this morning in anticipation of this morning's ruling. Fences up outside the high court in advance of demonstrations, which began in earnest as soon as the decision was released. Thus far, they have been vocal but peaceful. Michigan Republican Congressman Tim Walberg, whose home office was damaged in an attack on a pro-life center, which is also housed in that building.
It's a shame to see the culture of death and violence continue to grow. And I think as a result of the loss of an understanding of the true sanctity of life.
Walberg says blame any violence that may spring from today's court ruling in part on the Biden administration for not more forcefully rejecting and in some cases seeming to encourage attacks by pro-abortion extremist groups such as Jane's Revenge.
The culture, the morals, the values that would encourage a group like this, I would call them a domestic terrorist group. And when you have our attorney general in this country that's unwilling to push back on them, even as they demonstrate in front of justices of the Supreme Court houses and threaten them, we've got a growing problem of violence and it's a culture of death.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, among many Democrats, slamming today's Supreme Court ruling. In a statement, Pelosi said, quote, "The Republican-controlled Supreme Court has achieved the GOP's dark and extreme goal of ripping away women's rights to make their own reproductive health decisions." Fox News political analyst says the ramifications of today's decision may well be felt in the voting booth this year and beyond.
Perhaps on some races around the edges, Democrats will try to rally the base on this issue alone. But I think the biggest message it sends is that elections have consequences. And the Supreme Court and putting those justices on the Supreme Court really changes the fabric of our country.
The Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade today is, of course, being celebrated by pro-life advocates. Michael Geer with the Pennsylvania Family Institute.
It's a wonderful day in Pennsylvania and America, and we're excited about it. And now the real work begins.
He says today's ruling ends legislation that imposed abortion on demand for all 50 states.
The results of that have been more than 60 million unborn babies who have lost their life to abortion. Here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, more than 2 million abortions since the Roe versus Wade decision.
Geer is calling on Christians to pray for pregnancy care centers and the Supreme Court justices that ruled in favor of life today, as they could face more threats and attacks. Please stay with Family Life News. We'll have more reports, reaction, and analysis of today's landmark overturning of the Roe versus Wade decision as the afternoon goes on. In other news this day, the most sweeping gun reform legislation in nearly 30 years, one step closer to becoming law. The U.S. Senate passing the bipartisan Safer Communities Act on Thursday with the support of 50 Democrats and 15 Republicans.
$13 billion measure includes tougher background checks for the youngest buyers, keeping guns from more domestic violence offenders, and helping states put in place red flag laws.
CBS's Jennifer Kuiper reporting, it's expected to gain similar support in the House, which is debating that proposal this afternoon. Former Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen says he rebuffed numerous questions from former President Trump and surrogates about seizing voting machines after the 2020 election. Testifying before the January 6th House Committee, Rosen said there was no rationale to attempt to seize any voting machines. House Select Committee Chair Republican Adam Kinzinger.
It was a power play to win at all costs with no regard for the will of the American people.
Former aides of then-President Trump say six Republican lawmakers sought pardons following last year's Capitol riot, including Pennsylvania's Scott Perry. Responding to the day's proceedings on his own social media platform, the former president said the only thing not discussed during the hearing was the, quote, irrefutable evidence of fraud during the 2020 election. President Biden's competency once again being called into question after cameras at a meeting of offshore wind power implementation yesterday got a shot of the instruction card that Biden was using to get through the meeting. It contained basic reminders such as when to walk in, greeting the participants, when to sit down in his seat, among other things. Fox News medical contributor Dr. Mark Siegel is concerned about the president's ability to lead.
Somebody thinks he needs this note card, don't they? His staff. There's something called executive function. This man is making decisions that affect us all. The chief executive of the United States of America needs the highest executive function of all of us, not the lowest.
Hannah Hankins, a former White House communications official for then-President Barack Obama, told Fox News he, too, used a similar format of notes during his presidency. This is not the first time Biden's notes have gone viral. In March, he was seen holding a card reading Tough Putin Q&A talking points during a news briefing about the Russia-Ukraine conflict. And during an event last July, the president was handed a note reading, "Sir, there is something on your chin." Still to come on the Noon Report, panic alarms for New York schools, a Western PA church group takes a stand on transgender sports, and walking the width of the Keystone State for a good cause.
Well, a very good afternoon to all. What a great summer weekend we have coming up. Looking forward to sharing the details in our forecast. We'll see you in about 10 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Kevin Williams. Now, checking the stories making news where you live around New York and Pennsylvania. New York Governor Kathy Hochul says new panic alarm technology involves installing an application on mobile devices.
An app can show that there is an active shooter in a school to draw the attention that second, so no time is lost.
Lori and Elon Aldef lost their daughter, Alyssa, during the 2018 Parkland, Florida shooting.
Time equals life. Every minute counts during a life-threatening situation, and seconds can mean the difference between life and death.
Hochul says it would cost school districts an average of $2,000 to $4,000 to implement the system. While it was only a drill in Tioga County, Pennsylvania yesterday,
Fox 5-08, motor vehicle accident reported, school bus with injuries.
Mock emergency bus drills that were held in Westfield, PA, Tioga County. The drills put in place by the Northern Tioga School District in cooperation with UPMC Wellsboro, Pennsylvania State Police, and local emergency service agencies. School Superintendent Diana Barnes with the Northern Tioga School District tells WETM.
We're blessed as well to just have terrific local ambulance and fire departments, most all volunteer.
Student volunteers from local schools were given different roles to play at the accident scene for first responders to go through. The school district plans to do these drills once every 2 years at different locations. New Yorkers who want to cast their ballots ahead of the upcoming primary are running out of time to do so. The early voting period that began last Saturday is coming to an end on Sunday. There are primary contests being held for statewide races, including governor, lieutenant governor, and state assembly. Primary day in New York is Tuesday, June 28th. The Buffalo Police Department has released body camera footage of an officer-involved shooting that happened last week. Officials say the incident occurred after 27-year-old Nakeem Hayes allegedly shot and killed 63-year-old Atlas Johnson near Broadway and Sears Street in Buffalo last Friday night. When police approached Hayes, he jumped on the roof of one of their vehicles and opened fire, though he didn't hit anyone. The officers ran after Hayes, who was then wounded several times and is facing an attempted murder charge. Police Commissioner Joseph Ramaglia says BPD now has a new way to share such videos publicly. A new YouTube channel, Gramaglia says video of the encounter between Hayes and police shows the actions of officers were within the confines of the law and department policy. A woman who stole an ambulance in Utica last year before crashing it in the Rochester area has pleaded guilty to a grand larceny charge. Yesterday, Vanessa Armstead admitted to taking the ambulance from a garage after she had been released from the hospital following a car crash. Armstead then led police on a pursuit that came to an end when she drove that ambulance into the Irondequoit Bay. Armstead had to be rescued from the water and is facing up to 9 years in prison when she's sentenced in August. The search for a jet skier who was reported missing last weekend has come to a sad end. According to the Monroe County Sheriff's Department, the body of 43-year-old Anafil Nieves was found yesterday in Lake Ontario near Durham Beach. Crews have been looking for Nieves for several days after he disappeared last Saturday. In a statement, the Sheriff's Department expressed its condolences to Nieves' family and friends during this difficult time. State police are continuing their investigation into a crash in Ontario County that left one person dead and three others hurt. Troopers say a van went through a stop sign at the intersection of County Route 41 and Payne Road in Farmington yesterday. The vehicle was struck by a truck towing a dump trailer. The driver of the van passed away at the scene, while the people in the truck were treated for minor injuries. Anyone who saw that accident is asked to contact state police. In Pennsylvania, a Methodist group striking a blow against transgenderism in sports.
United Methodist Churches Western Pennsylvania Conference has approved a resolution that opposes males competing against females in sports. The decision stands in stark contrast to the general trend of the larger denomination, which has embraced same-sex marriage and homosexual ordination. John Lamparis of the Institute on Religion and Democracy tells the Christian Post, quote, "This shows that a great many rank-and-file United Methodists are not drinking the woke Kool-Aid."
Michael Harrington reporting in the latest poll on the race for Pennsylvania governor now. Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro leads the Republican nominee, State Senator Doug Mastriano, by 3 points, 49% to 46%. In the AARP poll, Shapiro leads among likely voters age 50 and older by 1 point, 48% to 47%. That puts Shapiro's lead within the margin of error. Shapiro's net favorability is stronger than Mastriano's, but the difference is closer than in the Fetterman-Oz race. Shapiro is viewed favorably by 47%, unfavorably by 34%. Mastriano viewed favorably by 37%, unfavorably by 44%. The Pennsylvania General Assembly has moved another step closer to creating a scholarship program for students in underperforming schools to transfer elsewhere. HB 2169 narrowly passed in the House in April. It would grant a $6,800 lifeline scholarship to students in the bottom 15% of the lowest performing schools and allow them to use the money on tuition, tutoring, and other educational expenses. This week, the Senate has considered the bill twice and was referred again to the Appropriations Committee to await its third consideration. Funding for these scholarships would come from already existing education funds. Opposition to the bill centered on accountability and misspent funds. Sponsored by Representative Kathy Rapp of Warren County, legislation seeking to protect landowners and farmlands against long-term liabilities associated with wind and solar energy development was approved by the Pennsylvania House this week. House Bill 2014 would specifically assure the proper bonding and reclamation of lands leased to solar and wind energy facilities. Rapp said landowners deserve assurance that their leased property won't be permanently scarred by the remnants of so-called zero fossil fuels or alternative energy development several decades from now. Rapp's legislation now advances to the state Senate for consideration. Top Pennsylvania lawmakers have struck a tentative deal to get private money out of election administration. The exact language still being written, but the compromise agreed to in principle in a private meeting of the legislature's top lawmakers on election policy would increase state funding for county election offices. Spotlight PA reports that according to three sources with direct knowledge of those negotiations, such an increase would counteract the potential loss of private foundation funding. According to National Public Radio, a total of 23 Pennsylvania counties received at least $16.5 million in funding from the Center for Tech and Civic Life, a nonprofit financed by Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg, in the lead-up to the 2020 election. One group is walking the whole way across Pennsylvania. Family Life's Brian Query tells us the trek is in support of veterans.
On June 11th, seven individuals stepped off from the Philadelphia Museum of Art and headed across the state on foot. Their goal? To bring awareness and raise funds for veterans in need. And tomorrow, the group finishes their 15-day journey in Westmoreland County, northeast of Pittsburgh, with over 300 miles under their belts. This year marks the 14th year for the PA Hero Walk, a group formed to bring awareness and to raise funds for veterans who need assistance with housing, food, utilities, and more. Since the first PA Hero Walk in 2009, the group has raised over $2.7 million for veterans in need. Brian Query, Family Life News.
All right, thank you very much, Brian. And that brings us to a check of sports. The Orlando Magic pulled one out of their hat at the NBA draft last night. With the first overall pick, the Magic surprised some experts by selecting Duke forward Paolo Banchero, the 19-year-old, the fifth Blue Devil to be taken with the first pick in the draft. Banchero joins Art Haman, Elton Brand, Kyrie Irving, and Zion Williamson as the other first overall picks out of Duke. The Blue Devils produced the most talent in this year's draft, too, with five former Duke players being selected. Gonzaga center Chet Holmgren taken second by the Oklahoma City City Thunder, Auburn forward Jabari Smith Jr., third overall to the Houston Rockets. Speaking of Kyrie Irving, he and the Nets could be reaching an impasse on their future together. ESPN reports Irving has created a list of teams for a potential sign and trade if he and Brooklyn can't work out a way for him to stay with the team. Irving's list reportedly includes the Lakers, Clippers, Knicks, Heat, Mavericks, and 76ers. In hockey, the Avalanche looking to capture their first Stanley Cup since 2001. Colorado hosts the Lightning tonight in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final in Denver. The Avs pulled out a controversial 3-2 overtime victory in Game 4 after Nazem Kadri scored the game winner in the extra period, even though it appeared that Colorado had too many men on the ice at the time. Tampa Bay now facing elimination. With a trail in the series 3-1, the Lightning will attempt to force a potential Game 6 back in Tampa with a win and keep their hopes alive for a third straight Stanley Cup title. To baseball, the Yankees walk off with a win to stun the Astros in the Bronx. New York scored 4 runs in the bottom of the ninth to top Houston 7-6 at Yankee Stadium. Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Hicks each with 3-run homers. Aaron Judge drove in the game winner with an RBI single. Miguel Castro credited with the victory after pitching a scoreless top of the ninth. Other winners on the ball diamonds yesterday included Minnesota, Seattle, Baltimore in the American League. In the National, chalk up a win for the Pirates. They went extra innings to top the Cubs 8-7. The Phillies, an easier 6-2 winner over San Diego. Other National League winners were Miami, Atlanta, the Dodgers, and Milwaukee. And that's a look at sports. All right, still to come on the Noon Report. We'll have a recap later on of the overturning of Roe versus Wade.
Given the amount of attention this issue gets, it's easy to give into a so-called inevitability thesis when it comes to transgender ideology, that it's just a matter of time before everyone's on board. Don't buy it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. A recent story that aired for Pride Month highlighted two parents who chose to raise their biologically female daughter as a transgender boy. Before Rylan could even speak, the anchor narrates, he managed to tell his parents that he is a boy. But, the piece continues, unlike some trans kids, when Rylan came out at the age of 5 a few years later, he had the full support of his parents. Saying with a straight face that a child as young as 5 could somehow come out to her parents before she can even speak, well, that tells us next to nothing about the child. It does, however, speak volumes about the parents, as well as the sad state of a culture that would allow a story like this to go unscrutinized, much less celebrated. Across the country, thousands of young people are being permanently marked by physical and psychological damage. In fact, some are now expressing deep regret. Recently, journalist Laura Dodsworth published a piece at the UK's The Critic. It was titled "The False Euphoria of Dysphoria." It's worth quoting at length. I photographed and interviewed women who thought they were transgender, had top surgery, then went on to change their mind and detransition. But although they reverted their names, their pronouns, and passports, flesh cannot be returned after a double mastectomy. In the article, Dodsworth describes how one young woman, Lucy, who, struggling with anorexia and body dysmorphia, was quickly prescribed gender reassignment surgery as treatment. Quote, at the age of just 23, she could not comprehend how doctors could remove her breast, uterus, and ovaries. I feel mutilated, she said. Still another young woman, Sinead, wishes she could have received real help instead of a quick fix. Quote, I've tried to talk about background issues with therapists. Actually, I think my gender issues come out of mental health, not the other way around. For the rest of my life, I will always be bewildered that this was allowed to happen. I was dealing with unaddressed trauma from sexual abuse. I needed therapy and help, not a bilateral mastectomy. The conclusion, according to Dodsworth, is simple. We have to listen to the stories of those who have detransitioned. Now, what this means for Christians is that we must not buy into any inevitability thesis when it comes to trans ideology. We're not on the wrong side of history or of our own religious beliefs or of love. Also, Christians have to give up, once and for all, the foolish and dangerous position of neutrality on this issue. Most damning of all is this claim that to not oppose destructive gender ideologies is somehow the loving thing to do. Creating space for the stories of detransitioners to be shared and told, that is a powerful way to combine truth with compassion. Ideas have consequences, and bad ideas have victims. In our cultural moment, these victims are not even supposed to exist, but it's becoming more and more clear they do. And if we can share their burden and prevent the pain of even one more victim, well, we must. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
For this afternoon, plentiful sunshine, pleasantly warm. High temperatures will be within a few degrees of 80. Tonight, clear, calm, and comfortable with low temperatures of around 60, 50s in some rural valleys. Tomorrow, sunny, becoming hot. High in the 80s to near 90, cooling near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario. And then some sunshine, hot, steamy Sunday. Chance of a late-day thunderstorm in western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. High temperatures Sunday, upper 80s to the middle 90s. Again, cooling near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario.
All right, thank you very much, Kevin Williams. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm Mark Webster. Thank you again for joining us. Recapping the day's top story, the U.S. Supreme Court this morning overturning Roe v. Wade, the decades-old decision which legalized abortion nationwide. NBC News reporter Pete Williams says the decision means one thing.
In roughly half the country, abortion is, as of now or soon will be, illegal.
The case decided by the court is out of Mississippi, where the state attempted to ban abortion after 15 weeks. Conservative Justice Samuel Alito delivered the majority opinion. The actual opinion came weeks after Politico published a leaked draft opinion indicating justices were indeed ready to strike down Roe. Williams takes a look at the gravity of this ruling.
This is the first time the Supreme Court has ever granted a constitutional right, which it did so when Roe was decided in 1973, and then took it away, a popular right that was widely recognized.
Demonstrations and counter-protests breaking out in front of the Supreme Court and elsewhere after the reversal of Roe v. Wade this morning. Women representing both sides of the abortion debate can be seen crying tears of joy and anguish. Police prepping for the possibility of violence as the majority conservative opinion sinks in. So far, though, no reports of any significant violence.
The yeas are 65, the nays are 33.
And with that, the U.S. Senate voted last night to approve new gun control legislation. The House Rules Committee working today on that gun safety bill, which the Senate approved on Thursday evening. The Senate passed the most sweeping firearms legislation in more than a quarter century. The 65-33 vote saw 15 Republicans, including Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, join with all 50 Democrats. President Biden says he's deeply disappointed by the Supreme Court's ruling in that closely watched gun law case, as well as several other Democrats who have spoken out against it. The CDC is investigating what it calls one of the worst outbreaks of meningococcal disease among gay and bisexual men in U.S. history, at least 24 cases and 6 deaths reported in Florida. There are 7 new wildfires burning across the country. The new blazes include 2 in Alaska and Florida, 1 each in Texas, New Jersey, and California. Over 30 fires are burning a combined 925,000 acres in Alaska right now. Gas prices still plenty high, though not as high as they have been. AAA says the current national average price for a gallon of gas is $4.93. Both New York and Pennsylvania come in right around $4.98 a gallon right now. Despite the significant price hike from a year ago, AAA's Doug Shoup expects car travel on the 4th of July weekend coming up will still be comparable to last year.
Overall travel volume is going to be fairly close to pre-pandemic levels, down just about 8% from what we saw in 2019 during that 4th of July weekend.
Diesel, meanwhile, is averaging about $6.17 a gallon in Pennsylvania, $6.25 in New York. And South Florida is pausing to remember the 98 people killed when Surfside's Champlain Towers South collapsed a year ago today, a public remembrance event taking place at the collapsed site.
To commemorate and honor the 98 souls whose spiritual presence continues to permeate our hearts, minds, and environment.
Urban search and rescue crew members reading the names of the victims and a torch will burn in their honor for the next 3 weeks at Veterans Park. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. Midway State Park on the shores of Chautauqua Lake is rooted in history, first opening as a picnic area. Generations have since enjoyed classic Herschel rides made in western New York, a vintage carousel, mini golf, go-karts, and more. Marla Connolly with New York State Parks gives us a preview. She spoke with our Tracy Lynn.
Tracy Lynn, and this is our summer-long staycation destination series. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we'll spotlight a staycation destination that's not far from home and won't break the bank. This week, we're taking you to Midway State Park in Maple Springs, New York.
I'm Marla Connolly. I am the park manager, too, with New York State Parks. I am responsible for the parks that are in Chautauqua County.
So when I hear state park, woods and picnic tables come to mind. Yet Midway State Park, located on the shores of Chautauqua Lake in western New York, offers more for families. Would you tell us about some of the highlights?
Sure. Midway State Park is New York State Park's only historic amusement park. Many generations of families have taken their children and grandchildren here after they've been here themselves as children. Yes, there are picnic tables to enjoy a break or a family reunion, but the rides and attractions here are timeless. From the mini golf to go-karts to our historic carousel and train, when you add in the arcade with all the classics and then the new games, there's a fun redemption center with prizes. We also now have an accessible all-ages free playground on site. And then don't forget our amazing gift shop, and top it all off with great food and treats, including cotton candy and caramel apples.
Well, I'm hungry and excited about being here. So including the train, how many rides are available?
There will be 20. We have many of the classic Herschel rides that were made right here in Western New York, and then others from that era as well. They include the oldest known roadway ride in the country, the second oldest Little Dipper coaster in the country, one of five known remaining original Dodgem buildings, though we run newer bumper cars now. We are also in the midst of installing a 1946 Ely Bridge Ferris wheel, which we believe is the same model that was here at the park historically in the mid-20th century. About a third of the rides have height maximums, so they're aimed at younger kids. About a third have height minimums, so they're aimed at taller kids. And then the remaining third we consider family rides because there's no height restrictions, so everybody can participate.
Oh, what fun. It's just so nice to be able to enjoy a place like this, kind of that old-time, lovely amusement area in the middle of a park.
Mm-hmm. We have a picnic grove that does have a lot of trees in it. The ride area itself, there is not a lot of shade right in the ride area.
So let's rewind time. How did the park get started more than 100 years ago?
The park was originally established in 1898 by the Jamestown and Lake Erie Railway as a picnic ground.
So almost, not quite, but almost 125 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And like you said earlier about the traditions of I grew up and now I bring my children and, you know, so on and so on. It just carries on. Marla, what is one of your favorite aspects of the park?
Just that, the timeless stories and memories that patrons are always sharing with us, all the generational stories.
Yeah, neat. How can guests best prepare for a trip to Midway State Park in Maple Springs, New York?
Well, there's no parking or admission fees. It's a great place to visit for the whole family. You only pay for the amusements and attractions that you're using. So you can bring the whole family and just pay for one or two kids or whatever you're doing as you go. Bring your sunscreen. Then you have a choice whether you enjoy the food that's on site or you can bring your own picnic lunch. It's up to you. We don't charge for bringing your own food. All attractions, with the exception of the arcade, accept credit cards, but we do have an on-site ATM in the arcade for your convenience.
Oh, it's so nice. I mean, people can enjoy a couple of trips each summer, and it's just such a lovely place to make family memories.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have the option of buying a wristband for somebody to ride all day with whatever rides they want, or if you only want to ride, say, just the train, you can buy a ticket and just ride the train, and that's it. So you're not over-investing in what you want to do.
Yeah. So if families want to spend a bit longer in the area, what are some other nearby attractions or activities they can take part in?
Well, Chautauqua County has so much to offer. Just 2 miles up the road, Long Point State Park on Lake Chautauqua hosts trails for hiking and biking, along with they have a swimming beach and then kayak rentals at the marina. Additionally, I would suggest visiting tourchautauqua.com to discover many other fun activities that are nearby.
Excellent. And where can we learn more about Midway State Park?
You can go to the New York State Parks website and select Midway State Park, or you can also check our Facebook page, Midway State Park.
We hope you've enjoyed coming along on our staycation destination. You can hear all the podcasts online. Join us next week as we visit a destination in Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Tracy. I've had the pleasure of visiting Midway State Park. Beautiful place indeed. You can catch Tracy's staycation feature Fridays this time of year on our Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org. Just ahead, an iPhone that went above and beyond the call of duty.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Wow, what a summer weekend we have coming up. High pressure set to deliver plentiful sunshine today, tomorrow, most of Sunday. Heat will build, humidity will eventually build as well, and that will eventually prime the atmosphere for the arrival of a cold front that'll threaten a few thunderstorms late Sunday, Sunday night, and early Monday. In the meantime, for this afternoon, plentiful sunshine, pleasantly warm. High temperatures will be within a few degrees of 80. Tonight, clear, calm, and comfortable with low temperatures of around 60, 50s in some rural valleys. Tomorrow, sunny, becoming hot. High in the 80s to near 90, cooler near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario. And then some sunshine, hot, steamy Sunday. Chance of a late-day thunderstorm, western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. High temperatures Sunday, upper 80s to the middle 90s. Again, cooler near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario.
Thank you, Kevin. Finally at noon, an iPhone lost in a British river during a bachelor party was returned to its owner after being found in the water 10 months later, still working. Michael Pacheco says he found the phone in the water while canoeing with his family this month in the river in Gloucestershire, and he took the device home, not expecting much from it.
And I just something blue in the water, and I picked it up, and it turned out to be this iPhone covered in, like, gunk or green stuff and mud. I didn't think it was any good.
But for the heck of it, Pacheco used an air compressor, tried to dry out the iPhone best he could, and was surprised when he plugged it into a charger and it sprang right back to life as if nothing had happened. A lock screen, however, prevented him from trying to find the owner's ID on the phone itself. Undaunted, he posted photos of the phone and its lock screen image, a picture of a man and a woman, on a local Facebook group. That post was then reshared over 1,000 times, and lo and behold, eventually, the man in the photo was identified as one Owain Davies of Edinburgh, Scotland.
Just can't believe it's come back to me.
Sounds like Hugh Grant. Anyway, Davies said he'd been canoeing as part of a bachelor party when he fell into the water. Phone popped out of his back pocket, and he quickly realized it was gone, but apparently not for good. Davies is understandably grateful for the finder going through all that effort to restore and then return his phone, not so much for the material value of the phone itself, but for the photos contained on it, which to him were priceless. And somewhere, an Apple engineer is also probably feeling pretty good about themselves. That's the world we live in for Friday, the 24th of June, 2022. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend. I'm Mark Webster, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.